welcome to the Inspired Intentions podcast with Skyterra Wellness. If you've been too busy and not taking care of yourself, it's time to reset habits and plunge into your new normal. I'm your host, Jeff Ford, and I'm joined today with a beautiful co-host, Lindsay Ford.
Thank you.
Welcome back on the podcast.
Thank you.
Oh, you're so welcome, Lindsay. And it's always a pleasure. I mean, we get to spend a lot of time together at home, but it's extra special when we're doing these podcasts together.
In the podcast room.
Yeah. And I think the series that we are about to begin today is super close to your heart. I know you are passionate about these three topics that we are going to go through. And so the main theme of our series that's going to be happening over the coming weeks is health at every size and the importance of it.
Yeah.
And what we're going to cover in our first episode is all about what is termed the obesity paradox. And basically today, what we're going to discuss is why are body beliefs just dead wrong? And I think that's going to be a solid place because a lot of our beliefs aren't founded in what the science is showing and what the evidence actually shares about body weight.
Yeah, it's pretty unfortunate.
It is unfortunate. And so
it's very unfortunate.
That'll be a great starting point just so we get all on the same page. And in our second part of this series, what we're going to cover is this whole idea of what's called weight inclusivity. And so weight inclusive care versus weight normative care. And these are terms that I'm interested to learn more about, Lindsay, because you bring this perspective to the table. I know you have discussed this a lot upstairs in our regular program. And I think I'm just so excited to understand why weight inclusive care is everything.
Yeah, I'd say it's two words that come together that we don't necessarily hear a lot about.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think it's changing. Our world is slightly moving in that direction. So that's going to be part two of our Health at Every Size series. And then our third and final part of this series is all about the practicality of what you want to do with this information. And so what we're going to cover there is how to simplify health at every size. And we're going to share five things you can do to improve your relationship with your body. And I don't know about you, Lindsay, but I think the importance of this series is going to hit home for a lot of our listeners because our world is just not thinking in this manner still. We are still flooded with kind of a different perspective out there. Why do you think this series is going to be important?
Oh, gosh, there's so many reasons. I feel like time and time again, I just hear our guests struggle with body image, history of dieting, and it's, you know, you've got folks that are 70, sometimes even 80 years old, and they're still
in our program.
Yes. And this still is something that is just completely taking over their minds and their behaviors. So being able to catch us even while people are young, to be able to start healing internally, but also seeing themselves differently and not putting so much emphasis on the scale and the numbers and weight loss and really looking at things from more of a true health perspective.
Yeah, because that's where we run into trouble. And it's what I've been hearing from guests on campus is just this lack of understanding between the difference of weight loss and health. And health doesn't directly relate to weight. And I think this is a message that is going to help so many people who have maybe struggled with this perspective of like weight loss leads to health. And in all cases, that's not necessarily true.
It can cause more stress. It can, I mean, we'll get into the nitty gritty. It's just, it's mind blowing about how much research is coming out continuously on the messaging of really hitting weight loss can cause more damage than positive.
What you're saying is like the emphasis that we've been placing on it societally and culturally has actually, there's a lot of research coming out that proves that it may be doing more harm than good, huh?
100.
Yeah. Do you have a story in regards to like a guest that you've maybe worked with that specifically highlights the topic we're going to get into today? So our topic is the obesity paradox and why our body beliefs are dead wrong. What comes to mind for you from a standpoint of your relationships and your work with potential guests?
Yeah, I think back to a time, this was a few years ago, but we had a guest come through this program that happened to live in a large body. And I don't want to necessarily put out the poundage, but it is a number that is high enough that we would typically assume certain things that would come with it.
When you say certain things that would come with it, what do you mean?
So just assumptions in regards to more, I'm looking more at like blood work stuff.
Yeah. So like those health biometrics.
Yeah. We might assume high cholesterol, high triglycerides, just certain things that we would normally typically make assumptions on with being in a 300 plus body.
Understood. All right.
As okay. a female.
Yeah.
The interesting thing to me was that she also came with her blood work. Now, when she first started her, she was so wise because she had done a lot of work internally before she even got to SkyTerra, but she knew that she wasn't living the highest quality of life that she wanted. So okay. she wanted to make certain changes. Absolutely. Yeah. Otherwise, I don't think she would have necessarily come to SkyTerra.
Yeah.
But when we looked at her blood work, it was phenomenal.
Mm-hmm.
So her fasting blood sugars were great. Her A1C was great. Her blood pressure was great. She wasn't on medications, and I want to put that out there. She wasn't on medications. This was just her. There were so many great aspects about her health. Her triglycerides were great. Her cholesterol was great. And yet she lived in this larger body, and for her it was more about mobility and just certain things that she wanted to do.
Mm-hmm.
But there was such a strong emphasis in her past on weight loss, weight loss, weight loss, weight loss.
Yeah.
So she wasn't able to see as clearly that these things internally were so great.
Yeah, the biometrics were fine. So she was actually a very healthy individual is what I'm hearing.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think my experience working with our LoseMart guests now, what I've been seeing that relates to this topic is about 25 to 50% of our guests who are doing this program now don't even want to get on the scale until the end of their 4 weeks with us. And it's so powerful to see this shift. And I think that's where we're going in part two. So we'll stay out of that today. But I am so proud when these guests come in with that perspective because they've been on that diet cycle. They've been like the guests that you were just sharing about. They've been told that weight loss, weight loss, weight loss. And I think a lot of guests we're seeing are getting to this place where they're starting to understand that it's less about the weight and more about how they feel. So with that, they sometimes want the feedback. They want their coach or quote unquote you or me to just have the in-body information. But I think it's powerful that they're actually staying away from the scale during their stay so that they're working on changing their beliefs, which is cool.
I love it.
Yeah.
I love nothing more when we've got a long-term guest or even a short-term guest say, you know what? I don't want to get on the scale.
Yeah.
I'd rather actually, if I do get on, I'd rather have you there with me and cover the information and you can help me process the information and interpret it in a way where it's not going to be triggering and emotionally devastating for me.
Yeah. Because they've learned from their past and they've learned what weight fixation has done for their ability to stay on their plans. And it's so cool. I bet you didn't even know that it's like 25 to 50% of our LoseMart guests at this time. So hopefully that gives you some hope.
Yeah. Hope. Yeah,
pretty
hope,
cool.
Hope,
huh?
Hope.
So here's where we're going to take this episode. I think the first question I have for you is, what bias do we have towards those individuals just living in larger bodies? What biases do we have?
So I am going to put this out there. I personally do not live in a larger body. So I can't personally understand what it's like to live in a larger body and anything where I have experienced. I have experienced other biases, but that's a whole separate thing. A lot of it's the same, ultimately the same, where there's always bias towards weight.
Yeah.
But I'd say there's assumptions that health isn't there for those that are living in larger bodies. There's also, I'd say, there's a lot of associations with they're lazy, unsuccessful, poor willpower. I was doing a lot of reading. And I've done a lot of reading on this, but especially before we started the series. And I saw a study that basically showed that over the past 20 years, we've had 66% increase in weight discrimination.
Whoa.
Yeah.
Meaning just how we look at individuals who are quote unquote overweight or obese. We have 66% increase in discrimination.
66% increase.
That's awful.
If we look at the numbers with quote unquote obesity, and everything there, we've got, what, larger numbers, right, over the past 20 years. So you've got discrimination going up. You've got these numbers going up. I guess what I'm trying to say is that if we're pushing weight loss, it's not working.
Yeah. Why is discrimination rarely challenged? Like, why do we just kind of, why are we pushing this topic to the side? What do you think?
I do think that there's enough correlations that the medical community over the years has seen, okay, we are seeing certain issues pop up in those that are quote, quote, obese.
Overweight. I'd also say maybe correlation isn't the exact word, just associations. There are probably some specific correlations with weight. But there's a, that's where I think we run into trouble with studies is we generalize. So yeah, I totally agree with that. What are you seeing that creates like the stigma? Is there anything that comes up for you with your work with guests that like why we have this stigma in the first place?
Oh my goodness. The list goes on. I mean, we've got social media, we've got family, we've got peers. The mother-child relationship is going to make the most influence on how we perceive our bodies most likely. We've got different types of work environments, different expectations.
Expectations is what was coming up for me. I just hear you listing off the expectations from different aspects of all of our lives.
Yep.
Now, let me push back on you a little bit here, Lindsay, because you brought it up in this first section of our time together today. You know, like, why should people listen to you about this weight stigma? And, you know, health at every size. And I know a guest has actually approached you at one point and kind of said this. So I'm wondering, you know, given your background and your work with guests, you know, just share with us your angle of this and why it's so important.
So you don't have to listen to me. That is one thing I will put out there is you don't have to listen to me. But I will say that I do come with a vast experience of working with those that have struggled with weight their entire lives. Those that have chronically dieted, those that have come to me and they've been shamed, they've been discriminated, they've been encouraged to pursue weight loss time and time again, and it's just not helping. I've also worked within the eating disorder field at a residential setting, so I've been in the midst of the intensity of it all where it shows up in an eating disorder. Where it completely disrupts somebody's life and health. So, you know, from a career side of things, that's all my career has been about. And then I'd say on a personal level, I have experienced challenges. And I am super proud of the fact that I've been able to truly break free from any sort of body negativity towards myself.
Yeah.
And showing up in ways where I'm not eating the way that I know is intuitive and helpful. And this has just been my complete passion.
Yeah. Well, I think you do such a great job of having the understanding and having the reps under your belt. You probably just wear one belt typically, right?
Actually, yeah, I've never been a fan of belts.
No. I kind of like belts.
Yeah, I used to wear them like when they were cool, you'd wear like with a dress or something.
Okay.
And put a little belt on.
Yeah. Well, I, you know, definitely didn't mean to be uncomfortable there, but I think, you know, there's even discrimination around how, you know, regardless of your size, there's discrimination in some way. And I think what we want from this series and from today is to just help everyone understand that, you know, just like you said, you're not alone. Our focus on weight. It's one of those things that just everybody thinks about on a daily basis. So I don't know if you remember when I told you this in my graduate program, they made us take what's called implicit bias tests. And so I believe the course, it was a health media course that I was taking.
Media.
Yeah.
Media.
Yeah, right. And so, oh, it was a health media effects course. And it was super interesting because basically it was all about how the media, depending on what you are listening to and what you are focused on, drives your thinking and drives your perception of various topics and various kind of controversial issues that are in the world. And so I remember taking this test. It was just like part of one of the weekly assignments. I was doing everything remote. And an implicit bias test, it tests us on racism, and it also tests us on this weight stigma. And what was wild, and I'm not surprised my results actually came out the way they did, but it actually showed that I had a moderate bias towards, or moderate, like uncomfortable, like discrimination towards overweight. And I think that's because I'm around it and I hear it. And it's not that, like, I believe that, you know, everybody should be skinnier, everyone should be a certain size, but it gave me a lot of personal, like, humility of, like, wow, you've got to be aware of your biases and just what you're putting out in the world. And I know us, we never want to be part of the problem.
I remember when you took this.
Yeah, because then you took it, didn't you?
I did.
Yeah. And you scored, like, perfectly as far as, like, not having a bias.
I forget what it was, but I think I actually leaned towards a bias for.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So.
But that's, again, I think I was already doing a lot of, you know.
Well, you know, you've had some personal self-work just, you know, in the eating disorder climate of things. Yeah. And then your past experience there. I mean, you've seen it. So let's keep this moving into talking about BMI, because BMI, I'm pretty sure it's plain wrong. Could you tell us what BMI is and why it's plain wrong, Lindsay?
Oh, I could go on for days, but I won't. Okay. So BMI stands for body mass index.
Okay.
It has classically put individuals into categories of underweight, quote, quote, normal or healthy weight, overweight, and obese.
Okay.
This is still currently being used within different healthcare practices. Insurance companies still utilize this as a really big deterrent on whether or not something might be covered. I mean, the list kind of goes on. So it's been something that's been used for years
now. It's like the standard of health almost.
Yeah, but it only factors in height and weight. So it doesn't look at some other things. But what I found interesting is that it's actually, the BMI was actually not even created by anyone in the health field. It was created by a mathematician.
Oh, wow.
So it wasn't even someone that was really looking at health. And it was created in 1832.
Whoa, almost 200 years ago.
Yeah, fun fact. But anyways, what I find the most fascinating is that this was actually, the BMI was changed not all that long ago. So in 1999, there was actually a panel of 9 different people from the National Institutes of Health.
Just 9? That's it?
Just 9. That's all I got. But basically, you had a strong percentage of those people actually had ties with the weight loss industry.
Great. So weight loss is good for business, and everything that we talk about around it might be good for big business.
Yeah. And, like, I don't know all the governmental stuff that's out there. All I know is that the BMI got changed. Yeah. And so this group of people then suggested that we change the BMI, where all of a sudden we changed the BMI cutoffs from overweight obesity categories got changed from 27.8 to 25. So people that used to be quote quote overweight got changed to obese.
Interesting. Let me just run it back for you. So basically, in 1999, they lowered it, and it sounds like there wasn't a lot of information necessarily yet to lower it.
Correct.
Yeah.
So the thing that's remarkable on my end is that I'll hear guests come through this program, and literally they're like, oh yeah, I remember that. And I remember that time. And overnight they went from overweight to obese.
Huh.
And it's like, wait a second, where's the actual science to back this up? So the science to actually back it up is not based off the current BMIs. You have a greater risk of mortality at 18.5 and below.
Interesting.
So if you're underweight, or if you've got a BMI at 35 and up.
Okay, so closer to what would be, quote unquote, the obese category, according to the BMI scale. And if it's okay, I'd like to speak to that, because from my perspective, it's flawed, because what BMI does not factor in is muscle mass and strength. It just doesn't. And when we do our Lose Smart program here at SkyTerra, that's what we're focused on, not the BMI. We're focused on the changes in fat and the improvements in muscle. And so when you share that kind of risk, the lowest I've heard, and this is the obesity paradox, the lowest risk of this height to weight ratio is just 25 to 30, which is the overweight category.
Yeah.
And so that's what information people do not receive, is that those who are in the overweight category of this height to weight ratio actually live longer in many cases. And this is population health. So it's not, you know, completely that's a fact on an individual level, but population wise, it's true.
Yep. And that's where, you know, if you're going to certain appointments, if you're concerned about quote unquote weight loss or whatnot, it's being able to say, you know what, actually, here's where the science lies. Let's actually look at my health.
Yeah.
Versus putting so much emphasis on these categories that aren't being backed up by science.
Yeah. Yeah. Understood. It's almost like we should make sure we're looking at other factors like your exercise patterns, your nutrition, insulin resistance versus insulin sensitivity. So basically blood sugar levels. And then social determinants, like economic like your socioeconomic status, all of those things are important. And I think that's what will start to break this weight stigma. Mm-hmm. But the obesity paradox, it's crazy.
Yeah.
You actually live longer if you're in the overweight category, not the skinny category.
Yep. Yeah. That's a really, I think, just big take-home message for people is to be able to explore that and be able to assess where you've been in the past, where you're at now, where you would like to go in the future, and to be able to almost, if you can, do the work to accept like where you're at and be able to look at those numbers differently because of all the bias.
Yeah. And it's not that we're discouraging weight loss. It's almost like we're asking you to maybe take a different look at how you approach it. And that's what's cool about our Lose Smart program is people come in for this. But what I'm seeing is most folks want to change that relationship with their body. And I think we're going to cover a lot of that in episode 3. So in getting to kind of the heart, the solution today, you've brought up this term as we were planning this series out called poodle science. And I found this interesting. And so do you want to explain what poodle science is?
Yeah. I mean, you can totally go on YouTube and type in poodle science and a really cool video will show up. And basically the idea of it is literally, I mean, we mentioned the word poodle. So think of a poodle, think of the dog a poodle. And the idea of this is that if we treated humans as if we treated the way we take care of dogs and different breeds, things would look a lot different. So when we, like, we've got a little Jack Russell Carl. He's actually in the room. He's super cute.
Yeah, he's on the website. Check it out. Staff section all
but
the way down.
We're not treating Carl like a mastiff. We're not trying to make Carl into a poodle. We're not trying to, we look at different, they're all dogs, but looking at different breeds and recognizing that each have different body types.
So you're saying everybody's body type is different.
A
and
lot.
So humans are kind of like breeds.
I mean, kind of,
yeah,
I guess.
Yeah.
So if we all ate and worked out the same, we would all be quote unquote the same.
Yeah, but that, and then that's not factual.
But
right?
That's not factual.
Yeah, and that wouldn't happen for even dogs.
Right.
If we, you know, approach their patterns the same.
So here's a question I get a lot. How much weight should I lose?
Oh, I get that all the time. Yeah.
How much weight should I
lose? I think the should is hard for me. That's always like where this weight stigma comes from is how much should I lose? That's tough.
But I'm not looking at a dog and being like, well, you know what, Carl? You need to be a really, really like larger Jack Russell. So we're going to try to force you to be in a size that naturally just isn't him.
Isn't your breed.
Same thing with a dog that would be a quote, quote, like stronger, larger dog.
Yeah, so
we're not trying to force it to be in a size that it's not.
So German Shepherd shouldn't look like Carl. Is that
correct.
What we're saying?
It's a German freaking Shepherd.
Yeah, like, yeah, I gotcha.
So... And I know that might sound like a really silly example, but as humans, we are like, if we look at the history of our healthcare model, it is we are trying to put everybody into the same shape, same size.
Yeah.
This is what is deemed okay. This is what is healthy.
Yep.
And it's just not the case.
Yeah. And for, you know, different backgrounds and different hereditary, I think that, you know, leads to different body types, you know, from the back end. So it's important to understand that poodle science is what we're kind of doing in society in a way. So it's not as helpful is what I'm hearing.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. So in wrapping up this part one, because we have more to share, I'm super excited as we get into part two, because I can't wait to learn more about weight inclusive care. So interesting to me. And I think hopefully like you feel like we're doing that here at SkyTerra, Lindsay. So we'll talk more about that. But what would be some ways for individuals today to take this information and think about it at home? Like what can help them get closer to changing their beliefs is my final question for you.
Ooh, that's a loaded question, but a good one. So I would say one of the things is to actually understand and actually do some reflecting on what's their own personal bias towards themselves. Have they ever been happy in their own body?
Okay, so maybe some journaling just about the current thoughts they have about their body.
Journaling, I'd say for some, they're already working with a therapist.
Yeah.
If you're already working with a therapist, maybe explore that even further. I would suggest a few books out there. There's Body Respect, Health at Every Size.
Body Beliefs, Jason Sieb.
Yep.
And one I would recommend as well is The Body of Truth, which really explores what we talked about with the obesity paradox as yeah. well.
So it could be just picking up a few books and just diving into it a little bit more on your own yeah. free time.
Yeah. Cool. Well, I think yeah. those are all practical steps, and I can't wait for part two. Let's give this a quick rundown of what we covered today. So basically, today we talked about why our body beliefs are dead wrong. And so the first thing we talked about is weight bias and how we have a bias. All of us have a bias at times towards those living in larger bodies. I think we then delved into the discrimination that has continued to linearly progress in our society. And secondly, we then started to just break down BMI, how this height to weight ratio isn't everything, how looking at body composition is probably more indicative of health, and also looking at blood work is more indicative of health, regardless of the body that you might be living in. And then finally, this poodle science concept. I love ending with that analogy. I think it makes a lot of sense. And we're not saying humans are dogs, but we are saying is that everybody is different. There is body diversity out there.
Yes.
And you can be healthy at every size.
Yes.
Yeah. What we'll cover in part two is going to be the difference between weight inclusive care and weight normative care. Thanks so much, Lindsay, for your perspective on this. I was definitely listening.
Awesome. I look forward to joining you all next time. All right, everyone. The Inspired Intentions podcast is a production of Skyterra Wellness Retreat. Special thanks to our executive producer, Alan Broyhill. Send us your questions and comments to inspiredintentions@skyterrawellness.com. Subscribe on iTunes and everywhere podcasts can be found. If someone you know might benefit from this podcast, share Inspired Intentions with them and give us a 5-star rating. Join us next week as we cut through the unrealistic noise on diets and fitness and show you how healthy living fits seamlessly into your already busy life. Thanks for listening.